So in which case, we can start the episode now with whatever. If you had like a story or anything, I don't know.
No, I was just going to go straight in.
Yeah, don't we like a little bit of chat, a tiny, tiny bit? You're back in the trolley room?
Yeah, no, I'm back in the trolley room. I mean, we can do some chat, but I feel like... I mean, I recommended you go see a film last week, and like the amount of shrift, the length of shrift you gave me was the shortest possible shrift I think I've ever encountered from you.
Yes.
I saw a genuinely phenomenal film at the cinema, and I've said it time and again, I've given up recommending films to people. I try not to do it. I came out of the film feeling alive and excited and really wanted to talk to anyone about it. I didn't know anyone who'd seen it. It's called Anatomy of a Fall, directed by Justin Triet. It's a French film, won the Palme d'Or, so it's not just me saying it's good. So I said, go and see it. And you just immediately went, I saw the trailer and I don't even care.
I shut you down. I am sorry. Can I just recount the text exchange, though, for listeners? Because you, out of the blue, go see Anatomy of a Fall ASAP.
I didn't want to kind of give away too much. I thought that would be enough.
Yeah. And I said, oh, really? That looked so boring. I was really bored by the trailer. I felt like I don't care if she did it or not already. And you said, mate, shut your hole and watch it. And I said, well, you got to give me something. It looks like it might be an Adam movie. Do you think it's a Joe film or what? You said, I said, you don't have to tell me anything about it, but why? You said, it's phenomenal, end of story. I said, yeah, but is that for you or me? You said, if that's not enough, I'm not sure what else to say. Anyway, we talked about it for a bit longer, and then it got to the stage where you reminded me that you were done with recommending things and you'd put yourself out there, and I said, I know, I'm a faulty bag, I'm broken as well, I'm sorry. I did actually regret it. But at the same time, I didn't see the film. I will see it, though. I've committed to seeing it. And I believe I'm going to see it with a colleague on Sunday. So I will report back.
What I don't understand is when you say, is this an Adam film? Like, you're Johnny Foreign Film. You're always banging on about going to the picture house in your little enclave with your wife.
Right.
This is the kind of film that you would have beaten me to the punch to see. Mm. And yet you're going, is this what... There is no such thing as a me film. And what did you mean by that?
There is a you. There's 100% a you
film. But what do you mean by that?
I meant by that you like films that are very written, that are like have a great story structure, where afterwards you can get all excited about how good the writing was. And also you like stuff that is very focused on sort of, myopic, I think, not in a negative sense, but like quite focused, not myopic.
You really used a very negative word.
Quite focused and, you like smaller stories. Like, so for example, Memento, we've talked about this before. You love that film. That's an Adam film, right? That is the canon Adam film. And when I watched the trailer for that French movie about the man falling out of the window, I sort of went, well, that kind of feels like an Adam film. Does that feel like a me film? The foreign movies that I like are the ones that are all romanticized and not real. You know those ones? I like those ones. I like foreign films that are like Richard Curtis London. Do you know? I like foreign films where someone from the country it was made in would watch it and go, what the fuck is this bullshit?
I don't exclusively like that thing that you just said.
Memento.
No, yeah, like very written films. Yeah. Like, After Sun, for me, is one of the pinnacles of the certainly last year.
Yeah.
That's not a very written film, and that's all about
true
emotion and vibe.
Absolutely true, but that's one that got you because of an emotional connection. And of a relevancy to your life that didn't predate your children, right? So I think that's why that one captured you. It got you right in the tone hole, and that's more of a Joe film than an Adam film.
No, wrong.
Wrong. Is it wrong?
Wrong. But, I mean, if you're saying that you'll just open the door to any old shit that does that, fine, yeah, that's you.
I
like great cinema.
You're an auteur. Okay? I know, I agree.
No, I'm not an auteur. You always misuse that word. An auteur is a person who does the thing. I'm a fucking sit on the seat.
Yeah, by the thing, you watch it, but you watch it actively like an auteur.
No, I do not. Take that back. That's absolute nonsense.
I won't take it back. I think you're an educated cinema visitor, and I'm not. And that's all I'm saying. You're a bit more discerning than I am.
cineast then. Call me a cineast.
An ortineast.
Fuck off. Anyway, it felt like a real slap in the face.
I'm sorry.
I shouldn't have to, based on our relationship, have to give you more, like you said. You've got to give me something more. It's like, no. Mm. I put myself out there.
Yeah.
And I've said, I think you're really going to like this. And as soon as you start going, was it an Adam film or a Joe film? Fuck off. I can't. There's nothing else more I can do here.
I agree.
Either you accept the gift or you keep your mouth shut.
Well, here's two responses to that. The first is, I am sorry. I sort of didn't instantly, but I soon after, when you pointed it out to me, I recognised my error. I didn't mean to shut you down when you were sharing and being open. And I am sorry for that. My second response is, next time you instruct me to do something with no context, I will simply do it immediately without question, or I will ignore your text message, which is what I think you've requested. But you're absolutely right. Who am I to ask any more details? Those are my two responses.
Yeah, I shouldn't have to sell a film. And you shouldn't have to sell a film for me, even if we weren't doing this podcast.
Fair. The difference is, though, I regularly, when I go to the cinema, I'll text you afterwards. And sometimes I tell you I'm going to see beforehand and I turn my phone off. And when I turn it back on, I have this little thought in my head. I think, oh, what if Adam's texted me? You know, maybe I could tell him about the film. Or I'll just text you straight away as soon as I get outside saying, this was great, that was great. Recently, this year I went to go and see an Italian film called The Eight Mountains, which was really not a really good film. And I told you about it and you didn't know anything about it. But off the bat, you said, nah, I'm fucking done with that bullshit. I watched all foreign films 20 years ago. I don't care anymore. I only care about written films. That's pretty much what you said to me. And I said, yeah, fair enough. Kind of a shame that Adam won't like go and enjoy the films that I recommend, but I'm not going to sort of be really hurt by it or make a big deal out of it or sort of, you know, bring it up later on a podcast. Although I have done that.
Yeah, I mean, that is because you're better than me, but then also you like to have your cake and eat it, so you then have then just done that.
I certainly do like to eat cake, if it's made of mayonnaise.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. This is the show in which we chat about the movies we'd forgot we'd even seen in the first place. We chat about the movies we have forgotten we'd even seen in the first place.
You're getting so good at that.
Joining me as ever, there he is, Mr. Old Leaky Bucket Boy, Joe Devine.
Hello there.
On today's episode, we are doing the 2008 comedy, in inverted commas, Role Models, directed by David Wayne and starring Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott, also featuring Elizabeth Banks, Christopher Mintz-Plasse of Superbad fame, and Bobby J. Thompson. Let's do the letterboxd. Oh, it's 99 mins, which I'd say is 9 mins too long for a comedy. They're about to get more than they plea bargained for. Not bad, actually. I don't mind that. Two salesmen trash a company truck on an energy drink-fueled bender. Upon their arrest, the court gives them a choice. Do hard time or spend 150 service hours with a mentorship program. Those are the stakes. After one day with the kids, however, jail doesn't look half bad. So that's a pretty good summary of everything that you get in the first act. It's lacking the romantic jeopardy that the girlfriend supplies in all these movies. Joe, I got you on this one.
Yeah.
Did you see this at the cinema?
I have no memory of where I first saw this film in 2008. It is possible that I watched it in the cinema, and it's the kind of film I would have gone to see, but also it's very possible that I just watched it on DVD. I did watch it many times, though, and although I had forgotten it, pretty much as soon as it started playing, I could recall almost everything down to the kind of rhythm and structure of scenes, and I was quoting lines from about halfway through. So I think it was all buried there deep down, but it was buried as one piece.
I guess because you've watched it so many times. I only watched this the once at the cinema because there were loads of these at the time. Yeah. You 40-year-old virgins, your man-child movies.
What do you call that? Is that what you call it? A man-child film?
Man-child movies.
Right.
Fun. There's a little fun. Here's a little. The first fun game. Uh-huh. I was just wanted to check my head research against some actual database facts about, oh, you know, just let's get some man-child films. Just double check. I've got them in my head, but let's just see what IMDb says. Uh-huh. And there's a tag in IMDb, and there's a man-child tag.
Oh.
Now, listen, uh-huh. The top 10 man-child films, I'm not going to read out.
Can I guess some?
Okay, that isn't the best bit of the game, but I'll have to re-Google the man. Oh, no, they're here. Go on, guess. Try guessing any of the top 10 man-child movies.
Anchorman?
Nope.
Okay, Old School?
Nope.
I Love You, Man?
Nope. These are all man-child movies, but they're not in the top 10.
Knocked Up?
No.
Wedding Crashers?
That's number 10.
That's number 10, wow.
You managed to squeak in at number 10.
Dodgeball?
No. Number one is a kind of a Will Ferrell one.
Elf? Elf, okay. Is Step Brothers in there?
No, you've said some very obvious ones, but they're not there. Seriously, though, wait, I've got to tell you the number two.
Yeah, please.
The number two film under the tag Man Child. Man Child is Prisoners. Is Prisoners, because it has a man in it who takes a child. I fucking love it. As soon as I saw that, I don't think that IMDb have sorted their tags out. And number three is A Man Turns Into a Child, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Oh my
Again,
God.
Not what I would consider a man-child movie.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost, the ghost, the ghost, the ghost.
I didn't mind rewatching this film, but there are no jokes in it. People talk very quickly and there's some very funny one-liners, but there aren't what I would consider any jokes. I couldn't remember much of what had happened, but it broadly plays the tropes of the man-child film. A man who needs to grow up and... He does that because his girlfriend dumps him and he needs to pull his act together and he needs to prove himself. So that's just the basic spine of the film. And then the rest of it is Sean William Scott gets given this cheeky little scamp, played wonderfully by Bobby J. Thompson, real little rascal, very funny, says fuck a lot. Kids swearing, hilarious. And Paul Rudd gets given this kind of nerdy, McLovin from Superbad, who's into role play. So about two-thirds of the film revolves around live-action role-play.
Yes.
Which I find it's just baffling and boring because so much of the film and the whole third act is all set around that. And it's not funny and it's not visually exciting and it's kind of dull as ditch water. But, you know, it's perfectly amiable and fine. There is nothing to say about this film. And I... For the purposes to rewatch this and think, oh, you know, let's chat about it. I've come out of a film and all I wanted to do is talk about it. And now I sit and watch a film and there is nothing to say about it. There's nothing to engage about. There's no hook to hang off it. There are no ideas it puts forward. Anything that we would speak about, like we would just be chewing over. People have bemoaned the Man-Child movie. There are articles bemoaning it back in like 2012, Like, people were sick of it over a decade ago. And right. Although this is this was 15 years old, so this is the film they were complaining about. So for us to kind of go, oh, it's all, you know, man babies, and there's nothing for me to get my teeth into there. It's not funny enough. You know, what is the purpose of a film if not to chat about?
I'm just laughing away gently at the notion that you've been gone on maybe a 15 minute rant about how there's nothing to say about the film, but you seem to have found many, many things to say about it just throughout that little bit there. I've got a few things to say about it.
Oh, good.
I don't want this to turn into, you know, 101 Adam Joe film chat, but I quite like it. I think it's funny. I laughed a lot at it. Not a lot. I laughed a few times at it. You know, here's three things, yeah? One, I told my colleague, Seb, about half an hour ago that we were recording an episode about this film. And he said, is that the one where McLovin dresses up and fights like a fantasy elf? And I said, yes. And then he laughed for like a good 60 seconds just at the thought of it. He really enjoyed that. And I think it's quite funny too. I also think it has a really solid cast. Watching it now, it's 15 years old. It felt like one of those films where I recognised almost every side character. Jane Lynch is quite funny in this film.
She's very good.
Ken Jeong, who I think people would probably most likely recognise from the Hangover films, he's very good in this film. He's very funny. He plays a fantasy king.
He feels like he's a little bit... He hasn't nailed his Hangover shtick yet.
He feels a bit
reined in.
Sure, but he's on the way there. He's on the journey. Ken Marino, who is very recognisable again as often a side character in these sorts of films, He co-wrote it. Okay, that's interesting. Also, we have Joe Latrullio, who is most famous from Brooklyn Nine-Nine as the
he's
sort of
very
squeaky
good
side
in
cop.
This.
He's great. And Matt Walsh, who I think is probably most famous from Veep,
he's barely in this.
He's
You're
barely
mentioning
in the film.
People now who are barely in it now. No, but You're my, just listing no, names.
No, but my point is more that like this is one of those films which came out at a particular time. It got a really solid cast of actors together this was kind of my point, is that they were in these small roles and have since blossomed into these, into these very recognisable figures. So kudos to the casting agent is what I'm saying. And my third point would be, I actually think
Three
it's more
points,
complicated.
Jesus. Hog.
Hog, hog, hog. Yeah, I think I've still spoken for less than half the time that you did asking your first question. My third point would be this, Mr. Host, sir, if I may.
Yes, I'll allow it.
I think the film is more complicated than the setup that you gave it. I don't think Paul Rudd is playing a character who needs to grow up. In fact, I think... His girlfriend, played by Elizabeth Banks, leaves him because he's obsessed with the notion that he needs to grow up. I think that's part of the idea. And also,
no,
I would say that
wrong.
Sean...
No, no, she leaves him because he's dull and he moans about stuff.
She leaves him because he moans about his misfortune in life. Like, she wants him to have fun at a party at the beginning of the film, the party being celebrated for his 10 years of employment at a specific company. He's the one that's unhappy with it and wants... some kind of progression, but is dull and all he's doing is moaning about it. She doesn't need him to grow up. She needs him to chill out.
He's a moody teenager. He needs to grow up and behave like an engaged co-partner. So yes, I know what you're saying. The premise of the whole man-child genre, which this is a part of, is that a guy... you're right and I'm right. We're both right and we're both wrong. But he specifically needs to do something. He needs to get out of a rut. He needs to step up and be the man that she needs him to be. So,
yeah, I agree with that. But like, I think it's a man-child film because like someone said it was once, and like we're defining it as that now.
No, because it's about them. It's about they've not growing. You're looking at growing up through a very narrow prism of. A job or respectability, and it's not that. Like growing up, you can think of it in more broadly. He needs to take their relationship more seriously, and he needs to give her what she wants and not be so selfish. That's growing up. High Fidelity is a man-child movie. In the same way, it's about a guy who's obsessive with his records and can't emotionally grow up and be with his girlfriend and give her what she needs. He isn't a textbook Will Ferrell man-child, but he is a man-child and does need to grow up. And High Fidelity follows exactly the same format as Role Models. All these films do. And that's not a bad thing. That's just what the genre is. The details might be different. And that might be why, in fact, if anything, it does make Paul Rudd's character a little bit more interesting. And the relationship between him and Stifler a little bit more interesting, because it is different. It doesn't feel...
It doesn't feel staid in that way.
And it does do... Like, the chemistry between Rudd and Stifler is very strong.
It's
and
great.
The chemistry between all four is very good. And they do... There are these tiny little tweaks to the formula. At the same time... maybe I'm just... There are so many of these films now... It's kind of wearisome, and also I just don't think it's funny enough. There just aren't the jokes. It's the humor is like very loosey-goosey. Everyone's improving, and I don't mind that.
I think of the genre that you've described, the list of films that we've gone through. I suppose what I'm saying is I think this is quite a solid example of one of those films. And I also added to that, I would say Sean William Scott Stifler. I'm not sure he's better in anything else that he's been in. I think he plays a sort of a character that you wouldn't necessarily expect of the actor. And I think one of the interesting things about this film is that you might expect the character roles to be like elements of them to be marginally reversed. Sean William Scott feels like, although he is also a man child and he doesn't have a stable relationship, likes to go to house parties, is happy having worked at this company for 10 years and feels sort of generally more, freewheeling. He's also more gentle. He's more loyal. He has more of a hold on his life. He doesn't have the same kind of rocky emotional turbulence. And I can't think of another film that I've seen Sean William Scott in where he's played exactly that kind of character. I think he's really good.
Another part of this insipid genre of films is that, men need things to learn something about themselves. Like an accidental baby gets dropped off, accidental pregnancy, accidentally realizing you're a virgin. All these things. I mean, I don't know why I'm moaning about it. This is just storytelling. Every story needs an inciting incident. And the thing that's going to... Stop laughing. I
can't help it. I just think it's funny. I feel like you've watched this film and you've gone, no, it's fine. There's nothing to say. I refuse to find anything interesting about it. And also it's fine because obviously films do need to have the things in them that I'm criticising it for having in.
What's your favourite man-child movie?
Well,
and what's your favourite comedy?
Twofer. I don't know. I'm not a huge sort of comedy fan, I would say. I used to really enjoy I Love You, Man. I thought that was a good, fun film. I thought Paul Rudd and Jason Segel had good chemistry on screen. But I watched that again recently, and I didn't really enjoy it.
Oh.
Similarly, I enjoyed a lot of the Will Ferrell movies, and I don't know. I just kind of haven't really kept them.
Do you know why you don't like I Love You, Man anymore?
Why not?
It's because when you watched it, you were single. And you could kind of look and watch the film as this sort of, through romantic young eyes of like, yeah, this is what committing to someone is. And there's some good, it's a nice, I'm also thinking of the 5-year engagement. You know, there are these.
I think I've seen that.
Have you not?
No.
Old Joe would have liked it. Now right. Joe would go. You'd go, no, 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 thanks.
Sure, sure.
I'm now married and I don't find anything funny about relationships.
Well, on this note, I did watch a comedy film the other day. I watched Old Dads, which is the new Bill Burr movie on Netflix. I did because it was just there and I thought like, just whatever. I'll see what it's about. You know, I mean, it's obviously rubbish. It's particularly bad, though. The main thing I thought about it was, hey, this is a Ricky Gervais movie, but it's with Bill Burr
right.
and not Ricky Gervais. It's one of those things...
Exactly, you know, what it like, looks like.
Not quite as jam-packed as a Ricky Gervais film where 70% of the dialogue is just from Ricky Gervais's stand-up set. But maybe like 30% of this one. And it's all, you know, aren't people annoying? And, you know, young people are all woke and... That they don't, you know, they're going to learn life lessons and stuff, and you know, there's also a very strange theme that comes through as well in this film. There are two kind of realization moments within the film, within the story, where the main character is supposed to kind of have an epiphany, realize something, hear something reflected back at them. One of them is that his wife makes a very intentionally sincere comment about how. Not to him, but separately to her friends, that men just don't have that many layers. And it's made, the comment is made in a way where the film thinks that. That's what the film is saying. And it thinks that the viewer is going to watch that and agree with it. And I found it sort of, I found it kind of obscene. And I thought it was a real reflection of what I imagine, I might be wrong, but what I imagine is like part of Bill Burr's life view that I doesn't really like represent what I see life as at all.
That is his worldview. Well, certainly that he puts across in his stand-up and lots of his stand-up, his earlier stand-up, I find very funny.
Sure.
But increasingly, it's weird as context changes, it does seem to change. Does seem to change stuff. I find it hard. I can't wrap my head around it. It's happened. It definitely happened to Ricky Gervais as
it
well.
It really did, yeah.
But then I also think he got a lot less funny and his stuff got really, really shit. With Bill Burr, I don't know what happened. It felt like he was really, really funny and was saying the unsayable, but in such a smart way, and he'd always pull it back. But that now it feels like he's just sort of, because so many of those people are as vocal,
yeah,
like the worst version of them is saying the same thing but without any irony.
Yeah, yeah.
It then kind of ruins. It's not like it ruins it, but
no, it does. Bill Burr used to be the only one, and now the irony is that there are 50 people in a room with 51 people in. 50 of them are saying you can't say that, but they're all saying it, so it doesn't feel edgy at all. It feels expected. I mean, did you see that? The latest Jimmy Carr stand-up set, it sort of did the rounds on social media and on YouTube and TikTok. He literally opens it, it's to an American audience, by saying, these are jokes that, you know, you're not allowed to tell anymore, that we'll look back on in the future and think, I can't believe these were ever said. And then goes on to say things that really aren't particularly funny. Not because they're offensive or anything, just because they're not funny.
Yeah.
And like it's all set up as though this is going to be the most shocking thing you've ever heard. I feel like the point of view of those people, or at least the point of view of their performance and their, you know, their persona, creative persona, is here's a bunch of stuff that, you know, increasingly you're not allowed to say, right? And they leverage this idea of like a culture of cancellation, and it's discussed regularly. But the reality is that there are more and more people saying those things. So the sort of the content and the context just move further and further apart, and then the joke's not funny at all. Like, you know, 6 years ago watching Bill Burr go on Conan and then react to the audience not really enjoying something, you're finding something he said uncomfortable, that was funny because it felt very real. And I think the conflict in that reality is the thing that's amusing, as opposed to the content of it necessarily. But now when you watch a Bill Burr stand-up gig, you assume that half of the audience actually agree. And that's like, that's not funny.
That is the fundamental problem. And in the same way that it was I found it impossible to find Louis C.K. funny after his kind of, I mean, it's not even a downfall because he continues to succeed as a stand-up. His whole, sure, the whole context of him as a performer was he would say quite, yeah, outrageous, edgy things, but he had such a intellectual honesty, and he positioned himself as a liberal and a good guy, he would take it to the very edge, sometimes cross the line, and then he'd always manage to pull it back somehow. But then when you find out that he's effectively a predator of sorts who has abused his power, it's like, well, I can't... The joke is... Your jokes don't make any sense anymore. Your performance...
Yeah, they're not safe anymore. And that's the only way it works. If the trust is breached or broken in any way, the jokes aren't funny anymore, and that context just does matter, right?
Like, so do you not like some of this, some of the humour? There's a lot of boob-related humour in this film. And it feels, maybe it feels a little bit quaint.
There's a couple of gay jokes as well that really feel not appropriate.
But then they're made by baddies. Like, Paul Rudd doesn't. Yeah. Paul Rudd kind of goes, ooh. Oh, in fact, that is the person who says the worst homophobic slur is Louis C.K. in this film.
Yeah, that's
he's
right.
In the beginning.
Yeah, he plays
a
cameo, doesn't he?
He doesn't. They don't even cut to a close up of him, but he uses the F word.
Yeah.
Isn't that? I guess I had him on mine because I thought, oh, is that Louis C.K. popping up as a cop? Okay.
It's funny that there's no close up of him. You wouldn't necessarily know unless he didn't have the distinctive ginger hair.
In saying something hateful, yeah, it all makes sense.
It does make sense. I didn't recognise him until he said the F word.
Yeah. I went, oh, okay, yeah, that's... you would have expected them then there to be a whole... They would have filmed a lot on the day, definitely. And then it's all just hit the cutting room floor because they're like, come on, this riffing isn't going to fit. We need to get them in prison. We need to get them in the bloody looking after kids programme.
Yes, yes.
Such is the price you pay for making an improvisational heavy movie. I mean, when it comes to improvisational heavy movies, for me, you just can't beat Christopher Guest.
Sure.
Best in Show.
Best in Show is the best one, I think.
You know, I rewatched Spinal Tap recently. It's just unbeaten.
Yeah.
But then he has kind of... It's strange that some of his other stuff isn't as good. Like Waiting for Guffman isn't great, and then his more recent stuff.
Oh, I love Waiting for Guffman. That's the theatre one, right?
Yeah, it's a bit. I guess the it's even more subtle. Like there is a fewer big laughs. But yeah, no, it is good, and it's a really great hook for a film. But then he did one for Netflix called Mascots with Chris O'Dowd in.
Yeah,
which I think has got a couple of funny bits, but it's kind. Yeah, it's. But then maybe it's just he got old.
Yeah, I think so.
You don't.
Old people don't find things as funny. Old people, I think, find things funny in a sort of like a, well, that's life way, you know, where they start to laugh. They start to laugh in a relaxed way about things that might stress out someone between the ages of 29 and 59, you know. But I feel as though they don't laugh in the same way that they used to because death's knocking.
I mean, you just have to look at John Cleese to know that very funny people stop being funny.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
We'll take them off.
Talking about man-child movies, it got me thinking about the female equivalent and how superior a genre it is.
Uh-huh.
Can you think of any? I mean, I know the answer to these. Can you think of any? What is the equivalent? You know, it's invariably a young woman who's a bit shit at life and she's struggling, she's flailing around and she goes on some kind of journey.
Let me tell you, Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep.
No.
Are you picking up what I'm putting down?
No, I'm not picking up The Devil's Wear Prada.
I really hated that film. I watched it for the first time this year, and I thought, what's the big deal? This is a bad film.
No, but, I mean, I'm not accepting that for the game.
Well, I rewatched Bridesmaids the other day. Is that, I mean, that's a tonal match.
That's a tonal match, and that's probably the cherry on top of all of these, because, but I'm thinking more... There's a lot of intimate, smaller versions of that are more like, I mean, Bridesmaids feels like it's as kind of grand in comedic scale as something like Hangover.
Huh? Miss Congeniality.
No.
What?
Stop
what
getting the game wrong.
No, but these are great. Come on, Legally Blonde, like Reese Witherspoon, 100% goes on a journey in that film, and so does Miss Congeniality.
I missed you saying Legally Blonde. I thought you...
Juno.
Juno, there we go. Now you're talking.
Now I'm just saying something you like. That's different. I think I won the game with all of those.
No. You didn't win the game. And also, hang on. The light in this fucking room's gone off. Hold on one sec.
Do you need a clap? What about Frances Ha?
Boom. 10 out of 10.
There you go. What I'm doing is I'm trying to think now of things that will be in Adam's wheelhouse.
So I'm thinking stuff like Obvious Child, Shiva Baby, The Farewell, Lady Bird, you know, Diary of a Teen...
You said one that everyone's seen.
You what?
I mean, up until that, I don't think anyone's seen the first three.
I think everyone's obviously seen Juno. Do you think Juno's still canon?
No.
But it's not anymore.
But it was for a long time.
So... All of these films I'm going to list, Diary of a Teenage Girl, Frances Ha, 20th Century Women to a lesser extent, Cajillionaire, Shiva Baby.
20th Century Women is fantastic. I love that film.
These, I would say, are the female equivalent of the genre. And they're so much richer, there's so much warmth, there's so much depth there. But you've nailed it when you've said, yeah, but not everyone's seen these films.
Sure.
Whereas
sure.
you tell your mate, oh, we're going to do Role Models, and he's laughing for 60 seconds.
Loved it. The bits where they dressed up and hit each other with the foam swords, he thought that was so funny.
And if you said to him, Juno, he'd just look blank-faced and go, what? I didn't realise a footballer from Brazil was on the podcast.
He thought I said Juninho. Yeah, I agree. That's absolutely correct.
All right. That was the best I could come up with.
No, well done. Well done. I liked it. Yeah.
So then that's that. That's all I've got.
Tell you what, though. Legally Blonde, great film.
Never seen it.
Miss Congeniality, great film.
Never seen it.
You never... What? So are you the person that you're talking about that hasn't seen these films?
No, I've seen the smaller ones. I've not seen... I'm not going to get into...
You were setting yourself up as a sort of hero of all women. But you haven't seen Miss Congeniality or Legally Blonde.
I probably...
Isn't that required viewing? Don't you have to watch that to not be a misogynist?
No, you have to list the film. You have to watch the films I listed.
Right.
That's like saying you have to watch The Notebook.
Right. You don't have to watch The Notebook. I don't think that counts.
You have to watch Marriage Story. That's what you have to watch.
Oh, God. If I had a choice between Marriage Story and The Notebook, I think I might never watch a film again.
Gosh, I plan on rewatching Marriage Story. Just because there's so many meaty, great meaty...
I am sure it's fantastic. I haven't seen it. And I can't imagine a time when I sit down and think, I want to watch Marriage Story. That's my issue with it. That's where I'm not interfacing with it. I don't want it.
You need to get out of your head sometimes. This, again, we come back, everything's circles.
Are you talking to me?
Circles within circles. You think... You have an idea of what a film is and you go, I don't want to watch that film. But guess what? Newsflash, that's not the film. You've got an idea. Wait a minute. You've got an idea in your head of what the film is and you've decided, I don't want to watch that film. But that's not what the film is. I do it too. I do it too.
The film isn't a married couple getting very angry and shouting at each other about things that feel very real and I'm sure are a good reflection of like what... You know, couples watching might argue about too. Is that not what the film is?
Do you not want to cathartically lance that boil?
I have enough of that in my own life. I'm not interested in watching other people's versions of that. And I cathartically lance my own boil on a daily basis, usually 5 or 10 minutes after I've woken up.
But if you watch it together, you get to both cathartically laugh and reflect, and then it kind of almost removes a series of arguments.
Right.
By watching it. It's why people watch horror movies. It gets you through.
I don't watch those either.
Then that's why you're so scared. That's why you that's why you can't go outside because you haven't again, I don't know why I'm stuck on this phrase today. That's why you need to lance the boil.
Sure.
I look at you and I think of a big
so I need to
a big
drain the swamp.
A big blob of pus. You need to be popped. That's gross. I'm so sorry.
Mainly I enjoy the notion of you having the gall to tell me that I think I know what a film is when I haven't watched it.
You are
the pharaoh of exactly that pyramid, my man. I'm far, far more open-minded than you are. You absolute hypocrite.
I've shaken the bee's nest.
You've made the filthy beast mad with rage.
The hornet's nest, I mean. I've shaken the bees and the hornet, and I've gone into the cave of the beast. The beast is awoken. He's covered in bees and wasps.
Filthy.
And hornets. He's livid.
And he's pointing at you and saying, you, egg on you, rubber and glue.
I'm the pharaoh. Oh, thanks. I
imagine
that.
I say Devil Wears Prada. You're like, no, it's not on my list because it's not Francis Ha. It's a film too many people have seen, and I'm an elitist.
We probably forgot about Bridget Jones.
Bridget Jones's Diary. We did forget about that.
She walked. She is. Now that was mega massive.
Dead center canon.
Dead center canon, and never seen it. But also that's.
I've never seen it either.
No, but I mean, we don't need to see it. You've seen it.
No, we don't need to see it. We know. That's the thing about Dead Center Canon films. You don't need to see them to know that they're Dead Center Canon, because it's just you just absorb it through culture, don't you? You just absorb that kind of stuff. Maybe this is a good time to play the box office game for role models. Role models budget estimated by IMDb. What do you reckon?
Well, the whole thing with these comedies is they're cheap and
cheap as chips, cheap and cheerful,
and they're going to be a little sleeper hit. It's got a sizable cast. Who knows where they shot it? How big is Paul Rudd at the time?
2008, pretty big. I mean, Anchorman's already been out, right?
Yeah,
like he's kind of
he's popping.
If he's not already at his peak, he's nearly there.
He's big enough to. Get this made.
Yes, he is.
$20 million?
$28 million.
Ooh, okay.
Budget.
Not bad.
Little out
on the old 10% rule, but I don't mind it.
I love you did that thing where I started to say it was a little out, so you said it first, like to get in there to show.
I know it's a little out.
To take control of the narrative that you were a little out. You were a little out, but that's fine. That's fine, man.
Yeah.
Opening weekend, US and Canada. Now, this was released on November the 9th, 2008. What do you think for opening weekend, Adam?
I have a feeling it's got Stifler in.
I'm going to say this is a toughy-wuffy, which it gives us the 20% margin for error.
It's got Stifler. It's got Rudd. Everyone knows he's funny. It's got people can recognise, it's got McLovin. It feels like a promise.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a conceit. It's got men weeing on the poster.
Sure.
When did it come out again?
November the 9th, 2008.
Oh, chilly. Chilly time of year.
You can count out the folks from Newfoundland leaving their houses to go to the cinema. Of course, because of the snow.
This is, I'd say, nigh on impossible. It's not making knocked
up money.
It's really
hard, I think. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go low. I'll say 12.
Not far off. I think that's actually permissible in this scenario. It's $19 million.
Okay.
Yeah, 7 out, but I think that's actually fine. Because this was that's a real tough one. It's hard to get any kind of a grasp on it.
But that's very good for a comedy.
Very good opening weekend. Yeah, I mean, just with the estimated budget, it's two-thirds of the estimated budget minus the marketing costs, of course.
Yeah.
Covered just from the opening weekend. Gross worldwide, what do you think this went on to take?
I think this did healthy business. Did it top 100?
Is Benjamin Franklin involved?
Benjamin Franklin?
Isn't Benjamin Franklin on the $100 bill?
Oh, right, okay.
I believe some cool people say a little Benjamin, you know, if they're talking about a $100 bill.
Yeah, it's all about the Benjamins.
It's all about the Benjis.
Did it
binge? That's the question.
Don't think it binged. But then, you know, people in England, we're going to see Stifler and we'll go, yes, please. And
that's
I think
true.
It would have been fairly well reviewed. Fairly, you know, this is fine.
Decent,
you'll get,
solid film.
You'll get some laughs.
Yeah.
120?
Good guess. It didn't quite Benjamin. Your first instinct was right. $93 million, though. Pretty close to a Benjo.
I was going to say more like 90, and then I panicked and went big.
That's fine. I think first instinct was correct, and on that basis, I think we can consider that a win, not quite a victory lap win,
no.
But one of those sorts of like you do a walk around, you clap and acknowledge the crowd do clap for you. Some of them stand. We all know that, you know. We go, yeah, that. Do you know what? That was good. That was good. But it's not quite a sort of like massive round of applause.
Absolutely not. It's a slightly embarrassed. Go on, fuck off now. I've just lost in the quarters of Wimbledon.
Sure. You're very welcome back at the next tournament.
Yeah.
You know? But we're done with you for now. Hey, do you want to do some emails?
Yeah, let's do some blimmin' emails.
Okay, we've got a number of emails here that range from a whole period of time. Here's one from Sia, all the way from Gothenburg in Sweden, Adam. Sia says, I know this isn't how it works, but just please do the sphere.
Oh.
The sphere feels apt for the format. Plus, you get to discuss big names combined in unexpected type of environment.
The film is just called Sphere, not The Sphere, but
sure.
I won't hold that against him.
Well, Sia has also capitalised the T in The Sphere, so Sia definitely thinks that there's a the there.
It's a really good shout. I remember that coming out, and it was supposed to be, it was a big old thing, I guess kind of an Abyss thing, but not directed by James Cameron. And sure. Boy, did it die.
Yeah, I've no clue what it is, so we can't do that, Sia.
Yeah, we're not going to get to do it unless me and Joe watch it and then forget it, which I'm not opposed to.
Watch it, and then maybe in a year's time I'll have forgotten it, you know? Quick other things, Sia also suggested Sergio Leone for Mozzarella, which I think is good fun. Now, the next email comes from Cass van der Laar. Cass van der Laar, I feel like all of our listeners are from the Nordic region. Cass van der Laar, dear Adam and Joe, it cannot be French nor Dutch. However, it can also not be Dutch, for it must be of quality and cannot be French. It must be rich, mild, yet not weak. It is a farmer's cheese, locally produced. It is salty to the taste, ever so slightly. It is unadulterated creaminess. Its slices are thick, so is its crust. You would place 3 slices on your cracker, although with its thickness and width, 2 would suffice. A movie with you forgot is Vice with Christian Bale. This movie is not good. I did forget about that movie. I don't understand the poem, but I liked it.
He's saying he's aligning the cheese to the movie, which I like.
Movie cheese, yeah. Do you remember that film? That was very underwhelming. It was an Adam, what's his name film?
Adam McKay. It was his follow-up to your favourite, The Big Short.
The Big Short, yeah.
I got halfway through and I meant to finish it because I didn't mind it.
Right.
I think we should do it.
It's actually a terrific shout. I think we should add that to the list and try and get each other with it in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you, Cass van der Laar, and thanks for the lovely poem. The next email comes from Google. Security alert. A new sign-in on a Mac. I don't really understand that one, but that's fine.
Great. Yeah, Joe, you're doing great at hosting the show for so long.
Right.
You've pretended like I could be the host.
Sure.
And as soon as we get some emails, suddenly you're like... you're fucking Chris Evans and you're reading out all the emails and like I'm chopped liver.
The thing is, what you are, you're not chopped liver. What you are is sort of a god to these people. I'm more accessible. And so I feel like in terms of the social front-facing side of things, I think when people listen to you, they think this man is so intelligent and so vastly knowledgeable that I can't look directly into his eyes. So that's why I'm sort of acting as a little mirror for you here. Plus, you may have something to say about this next email that comes from Chris Hilliard. Adam and Joe, just wanted to say I love the show. Thanks very much. That's nice. Lots of a lovely bit of a longer message there, but also here's some suggestions to add to your lists. Do you know what, actually? These are good suggestions that I'm not going to say aloud, and I'm going to add them to my list. Fuck you. I'll get you with them, Adam. You like that one, didn't you? Dan O'Rourke writes in. Dan O'Rourke says, on Mystic River, Sean Penn winning the best actor over Bill Murray for Lost in Translation was a crime against cinema, and I don't even care about the Oscars. What do you think about that?
I don't care about the Oscars, but if you were putting those against one another, Murray is putting in a far more subtle performance. I'm a bit over Bill Murray and have been long before anyone else was over Bill Murray. I've been over Bill Murray for many a year.
Sure.
So my hackles already rise when someone suggests that Bill Murray's good. But he is good, nay great, in that film. And so just pound for pound, head v head, Penn v Murray, you know, Murray's Murray's taken that all day long.
Yeah, he was on a tirade at that time. He was looking for it, right? Because the follow-up he did with, what's that chap's name and what's that film's name? Broken Flowers.
Jim Jarmusch.
Is it Jim Jarmusch? Yeah. I was actually thinking of his co-star in that, who's also in James Bond films, and I can't remember his name.
Maybe don't bring things up that you can't say the names of, because it just slows everything down and can't leave it in.
That's a terrific tip. Thank you. I'll put that one in mine. Dan also sent a brilliant list as well.
Is this how you're going to shut me down now?
No, I actually genuinely thought that was a really good tip. I'll take it on board.
I think you've been listening to our podcast too much, so now you know how to just fucking defuse me. You piece of shit.
Here's a good suggestion from Will Tallman, or Will Talman. Not sure how Will says his name. It's a good film suggestion, which I don't think we would ever do, Adam, simply because the nature and the themes of the film are a little tricky to have a fun conversation about. The film is 8mm, but I forgot that.
No, you're wrong.
You think I'm wrong?
Yeah, that's one we should definitely do.
That's just about a snuff film, right?
Yeah, but it's got Joaquin Phoenix in and Nick Cage. It's a really good one to do, and I love the screenwriter of that. He wrote The Killer, so I'd do that all day long.
It's got Gandolfini in it as well, right?
Yeah, we're doing it.
All right, fine. Thank you, Will. We'll add that one to the list. Here's a familiar name. An email from Sunil Bajaj, who I believe is your friend.
He said he'd email in.
Yeah. Content of the email, Ross. That's what Sunny says. Thank you, Sunny. I absolutely agree with you. Yeah. Oh, and a second email from Sia. This email is with reference to our conversation about Moby's Extreme Ways, and it's a connection to the film. Sia has suggested God moving over the face of the waters, which is connected with the film Heat, forever intertwined. What about for you?
I mean, I don't even know what that sounds like. I love that film, but I don't know what song he... I'd have to listen to it after.
Sure. Thank you, Sia. And last but not least, an email from Lloyd. Just a quick line to say I'm really enjoying the pod. I'm a day one listener with 32 years of life under my belt and an infant baby child. So the chance to sit around and talk movies with friends is something that A, I don't do nearly as much as I used to, and B, as much as I still love to. Listening to you both fluctuate between genuinely interesting analysis and shit-talking is a real treat. Thank you. Playing the film game at the end of the show in my own head has become something of a weekly ritual. That's cool. I tend to listen to the pod on my own at the end of the night when I'm cleaning up baby bottles or playing some video games after my wife has hit the hay. I started collating a list on notes, and it's grown and grown to the point that I would like to pass it over to you, having listened to the Bourne episode last night and hearing you go through 25 possibilities. I think this list could cover more than one whole episode. Thanks again for the hashtag content. Films I forgot, and a really great list. That's a nice email.
Lloyd, that's really genuinely touching. As a father myself, good luck. It's a real ride, and it's genuinely really nice to hear that someone likes us and likes me. us.
Great. Thanks for your emails, everybody. Where can they email us, Adam?
They can email us moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. You can follow Joe on X, as it is now known. He's a big deal. So if you just Google Joe Devine and X, you'll find the pornographic movies he's in. And you can follow me on Letterboxd.
What kind of joke is that? It's like a 45-year-old dad from a town outside of the capital city.
Yeah, well, guess what? I'm 42, so you're not far off.
Good God,
You can follow me on Letterboxd. People are following me at Error of Ways. It's really nice. And I follow them back. I follow them Insta back. So I like that.
Adam Richmond, hashtag follow back.
Follow back, man. I'll follow you back.
Myself up as a fucking asshole.
Should we do the little game we do at the end? This is the bit of the podcast where one of us reads out a list of films to try and catch the other one out for a movie they forgot they forgot. This week, it's Joe reading out things to me, and he better have a long list.
I have got quite a long list.
He needs a long list.
Yeah, you don't forget anything. Okay, I'm starting here with Cinema Paradiso.
This is embarrassing.
Because
this is really embarrassing. See, the first time we've ever done this list that I'm actually embarrassed, and I don't even want to say it.
You haven't seen it.
I haven't seen Cinema Paradiso, and someone said that to me at work, that mentioned that film, and I said I had to admit I hadn't seen it. It's a real hey people, email us in at moviesyouforgotyouforgot at gmail.com. What are your cinematic blind spots?
Yeah.
And by that I mean, what is the big movie that you feel like you should have seen but you haven't seen and it haunts you?
And that's the one for you.
Mine is Cinema Paradiso.
It doesn't need saying. It's a terrific film. Okay.
And yet you said it.
And yet I said it.
I had my cake and ate it.
This is a bit of a cheeky one here. I think you might reject this out of hand, but I'd forgotten basically everything about it. And if the second one wasn't coming out very soon, I think I might have forgotten that it existed. So on that basis, I've put Dune on here.
That's punchy.
I'm showing you my working.
I mean, I obviously saw that. But I've had no interest in revisiting it. And I think, can I remember anything about it?
I watched it on New Year's Day of 2023 with my wife at home. And we sort of both simultaneously thought, oh yeah, you know, as well as, yeah. But they've committed to it. They're going all guns, aren't they? It's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, they kept telling me it was a big deal. I really haven't thought about it until, yeah, obviously I have heard, they're obviously chatting about the sequel, but I love Denis Villeneuve. I feel like, okay, all right, let's do it. There's no way I'd ever rewatch this film unless we did it.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's do it now.
Yes. Okay.
Let's juice our numbers.
Is it our first Timothy Chalamet?
No, he popped up in, oh no, we haven't done Lady Bird. Yeah, maybe it is. It's our first Chalamet's.
There you go.
Timothée. You know he's called... It's Timothée.
Is it?
It's pronounced Timothée. Yeah, he's not Timothy. He's Timothée.
Really?
Like the shampoo. Timothée Chalamet. I've just wasted my best fact on this episode.
But. I know. It just sounds funny when you say it. It sounds like you're doing an accent. Say it again, all one word, all together.
Timothée Chalamet. That's his name. He's not called Timothy.
Right.
He's French.
Well,
French Canadian, I think.
He's French.
French. Yeah, you know, Francois.
Yeah.
He's called Francois.
Okay. Well, there we go. Dune with Timothée Chalamet.
I thought people were going to be angry about old Melancholia, but I think everyone, there's going to be people who will be, I think, a bit annoyed that we'll say we forgot Dune.
Do Dune fans even exist? Is Dune's viewership not just made up of people who watch it because it's on? I know that Dune as a universe, as a series of novels, and I understand that, you know, it's historical position within sci-fi. I mean, this specific reboot franchise. Is there anyone that really cares?
I feel like everyone is insisting upon its importance and goodness because it has to work out. We need both, and not just that. We want spurious spin-offs about the weird like monk-like women and stuff. So there's a kind of contingent who are willing these things into existence. And everyone else is going, yeah, all right then. 3 hours? Sure. Yeah,
that's it. I think the Dune audience is basically the word to describe them is just nonplussed, right?
Well, no, I think The Dune audience, is they'll be a very vocal, excited, but everyone else did unfathomably and fairly, it's nice that they turned up because they got told to turn up. Sometimes the people do turn up when they get told to turn up.
Right. Oh, I'm excited to play the box office game now. I had no clue about that, so I'm genuinely thrilled.
You want to play the box office game for June?
No, next week when we do the whole episode.
Oh, yeah. No, I know, but you're already excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to find out myself how much money Dune cost and took.
Cost and took.
Welcome to the
Cost
and Took.
That sounds like a bloody
game.
Character from Dune, if I'm not much mistaken. Cost and took. Yeah. He walked out from the sandy dunes and looked out and said, "Me, where's my spice, mother? We've run out of spice. Hey, come back in here, Cost and took. Hey, you haven't finished up with your spice bowl in here. You know, clean up your things, Cost and took. I'm sick of thee."
Hey, you've only got two characters, you know, and they're just a male and female version of the same person.
But you've got to chip in. What's your character?
Well,
called?
I would have chipped in, but you played both the characters.
No, there's a third. There's a third character.
Okay, hold on. I'm Grandad Cost and Took, and I also talk like this. Where's the spicy spice? Back in my day, we also had spice. We never had any of that sauce. We only had dray food. No wet stuff for me. Oh, good Lord. There's a big worm.
Shut up, Grandad Cost and Took. You're always talking about dry food and wet food. We like middling food, and I'll...
I always said to me old granny Cost and Took, who sadly passed away, God bless her soul, I said, it's wet food for you, it's dry for me and dog.
Cost and Took was a really good idea. Cost and Took was a really good idea.
I know, I ruined it. I'm sorry, I.
And so that was Role Models. See you next week. All right, say bye-bye, Joe.
Bye-bye, Joe.